In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are focused on cybersecurity for hour number two of our program today and have a terrific expert in studio to talk about that subject with me. Happy to welcome the former Chief Information Officer at FBI, Zal Azmi, in studio with me today. Thank you very much for being on the program today. Glad to have you. And I guess we'll start with, obviously, a lot of folks know that you're no longer at FBI. Talk about what you're doing today.
Francis, thank you for having me back on the show. And as you already know, I left the FBI about a year and a half ago, and I'm currently working for CACI International, and I'm actually running their cyber practice. I'm involved in strategy and execution of cyber solutions for the security of our clients and customers. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's very exciting area. Everybody is in it, and I'm glad to be with CACI.
A lot of people are in it. You're right about that. There are people who are getting into the cyber market who have not been in it before. Is there a risk of cybersecurity becoming commoditized, do you think, where people think that I just have to go and get this cybersecurity widget and stick it on my network and I'm going to be fine? Or do you think most people have, especially agencies, do they have a sense that maybe it's as much art as it is science, given where we stand today?
I think latter. Mm-hmm. Mainly because the complexity of the cyber threats and the frequency of the cyber intrusions are increasing. So there are certain aspects of cybersecurity that could become a repeatable process, for lack of better words, mm-hmm. that is going to be put in a technical solution or a black box that will resolve that. Mm-hmm. But even with those technologies, they have to constantly be refreshed and modified because, as I said, the complexity of the intrusions and cyber challenges are growing. Mm-hmm. So it's not a one-time solution is going to take care of everything. I mean, a good example is our antivirus or software that actually looks for malware. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are signature-based, and every time the adversaries are introducing a new signature, we have to update these. Mm-hmm. So there are certain aspects of this market or cyberspace that has to be constantly reviewed, monitored, and actually we have to be proactive and anticipate what kind of other threats will be coming our way, mm-hmm. and prepare for it.
One thing that I found interesting between a difference between discussions about cybersecurity in the current administration versus the previous administration is I've noticed that from the president on down, everybody in this administration has been very explicit in stating we know that the private sector is responsible for and it's the number that they cite in the 80s, 80-some percent of the infrastructure in our country is of the cyber infrastructure is overseen by the private sector, and they're just very deliberate and very explicit about that. And I take that as a good sign that they understand that the relationship that they have to have with the private sector on this issue is very important. I'm wondering about your thoughts about that.
I think acknowledging the fact that 80-85% of the digital infrastructure is actually sitting in a private sector is the right thing to do, mm-hmm. because acknowledging that we will not be at a point to have this dialogue or discussion between public and private sector. And the key to that dialogue is mutual trust. The government now knows that most of 85% of their communication is going over private sector networks, and private sector knows that they have to actually worry about security of government data. Mm-hmm. So that acknowledgement has brought the two communities together, and I think we've been making some progress to build on that partnership and that relationship to actually secure our digital infrastructure, which is really key, mm-hmm. Key to our economic survivability, key to our day-to-day lifestyle. Anything you know, anything you do, anything you say these days is somehow digitally captured, mm-hmm. and it is important for us to protect those.
On a side note, I continue to be amazed at the number of people who forget that everything that we're doing is being recorded somehow. You and I have video cameras, probably both of us, in our pockets, and people don't realize that. I think of that as a particular golfer gets back into the golf world this afternoon. Just a little side note there that doesn't have anything to do with our conversation necessarily. What I am interested in, though, is the way the reason I mentioned the cyber infrastructure is because if you think about countries where the government owns the cyber infrastructure, if it would be necessary for whatever reason to close it down for security reasons or take it over or whatever, it's easy. You flip a switch, somebody makes the decision, that can be done. Legislation came through Congress not long ago that would have given or that gives President Obama the authority, or any president, the authority to do that here if necessary. And there were some people who just went bananas. The idea that the president could shut this down. And all that. So that presents a unique challenge for us as a country trying to make sure that, and especially for government, because if you're CIO at FBI and your network needs to go down. And I imagine that was the challenge that you faced from time to time as intrusions started to get pretty hardcore. It's not as easy as it maybe could be or should be in some cases, I would think.
I agree. I mean, when you're looking at the digital infrastructure, it's completely interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
So to have a panic button or a red switch that is going to kill the communication on the network, it's kind of hard to implement because you really don't know which side of the internet you're shutting down and what is the impact on the rest of the network.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything is interconnected. Your communications are going from hub to hub, from service provider to service provider. So it presents a challenge in terms of what does that really mean to shut down the internet?
Mm-hmm.
What does that really mean? And if we look at the domains that we have, if it's .gov or .mil or .com or .edu, even if we try to actually shut down one of those domains by themselves, will present a challenge because, again, they're all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the other part of it is obviously the whole issue of legislations and the laws that are in place. I mean, the telecommunication network is owned by the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And the government probably, whenever they decide to take over the telecommunication, I mean, there'll be a resistance and pushback because that's the way we're structured as a
mm-hmm.
nation.
Yeah.
So it's going to be difficult to actually implement a kill switch for the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally cannot see how it can be done.
And is it even a desirable – well, I guess if you don't think that it can be done, debating whether it's desirable or not is probably a futile exercise.
I would look at it differently. You know, everything is about mission operations and mission survivability.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to build the risk mitigation, security parameters, and backup and recovery procedures in place and resiliency in our network that regardless of what kind of attack we're suffering, the mission still continues. That things still work. If it's a financial industry, they still can do transactions.
Mm-hmm.
If it's command and control and DoD wants to control their troops in the battlefield, that communication must survive. So the whole idea behind cybersecurity, and that's one of the things that we are looking with NCACI, is the survivability of the mission.
Mm-hmm.
We will not allow a network or a communication path to come down if it's going to impact the mission of our clients. We will do whatever we can and build whatever security we need to build around that infrastructure to make sure the commanders have contact with their warfighters.
My guest is Zal Azmi. He's the former chief information officer at the FBI, now with the CACI International, here for the hour to talk about cybersecurity issues on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Are you in the cloud? Whether you're managing your software on-premise, in the cloud, or a bit of both, Microsoft offers you unprecedented choice. The choice to manage the mission-critical computing resources your agency needs now with the vision, flexibility, and security features to meet many of the ever-evolving federal requirements. Cloud services for Microsoft. We're all in. Are you in?
Learn more about Microsoft's cloud services. Visit Microsoft.com/govcloud. That's Microsoft.com/govcloud.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show is sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trossaven, and WTS, Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
The U.S. and Brazil are about to sign a new agreement to bolster defense cooperation. It's the first of its kind between the two top economies in this hemisphere in more than 30 years. This agreement could be signed next week, and it's meant to strengthen the ties between the two militaries, despite tension over Brazil's refusal to back new sanctions against Iran. At the same time, Brazil is evaluating bids in a new multi-billion-dollar jet fighter competition, and Boeing is involved in that. I'm J.J. Green.
When you board a plane, do you look around with a curious eye? Do you wonder if the authorities know who's on board? Have the passengers been screened? Is there a threat to your safety? Airink knows the critical nature of airline security. Airink works with governments and airlines around the globe providing electronic border solutions. Utilizing one of the world's largest secure private networks, Airink ensures that passenger data has been delivered to the proper authorities so your flight is secure. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. We continue our week-long series, HR Reinvented. This afternoon, Professor David Lewis. He offers insights about how government recruits, and he says feds can do better, and a remarkable initiative that seeks to tap the wisdom of crowds for government procurement. We'll talk to the team behind GSA's Better Buy Project. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorbeck and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Zal Azmi is with me in the studio today, and we're talking about cybersecurity and a lot of other issues that are facing CIOs at the agency level. And it's interesting, we were just talking during the break about the fact that even people who are not staffed, who don't come under the purvey of the chief information officer at the agency, all of the issues that the CIO deals with affects everybody in the C-suite and from there on down, I imagine, because of how pervasive technology is and the way the agencies meet their missions. As the CIOs and the other people who are concerned with cybersecurity at the agencies look around, try to struggle with these issues, are you sensing that there is some kind of, I probably overuse the term low-hanging fruit, but are there things that can be done relatively quickly or relatively easily, maybe even relatively inexpensively, that aren't being done now as far as educating staff, anything like that that might help try to patch some of these holes or prevent some of these problems?
I think there are a number of things that can be done in that area. One of the key areas that needs to be sort of addressed is actually protecting the funding that is allocated for information security, information assurance, and cyber. That has to be allocated, protected, and invested properly. Education, certification, training is also very important. But you mentioned the word low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. Actually, there is a list. John Galligan, a former CIO of the Air Force, actually, and a group of folks put a list of 20 security controls, sort of published that about a year ago. And their survey showed that about 70 or 80% of the security violation happens because those 20 controls are not in place. Mm-hmm. So I always, when I talk to CISOs and CIOs, I always say, you know what, run a little security assessment of your network to see if these 20 controls are in place for your infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And if they are in place, then you're going to have to move to the next level and start securing your networks if you have vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. But that 20, I have always used that as a baseline for it's easy to do. It's part of every infrastructure. You just need to evaluate it, make sure it's secure.
Those are the fundamentals to start with.
Those are the fundamentals.
Yeah. The biggest equation or the biggest element of the equation is the people element. We can have all of the great training in place that we want. We can have all of the great hardware and software applications and so on and so forth. But all it takes is one person who plugs a thumb drive into the network that's infected or takes home a laptop that shouldn't take home a laptop. And there you go. You've got a breach that you weren't expecting and don't want. Obviously, people are people. They're not going to be perfect. There are going to be mistakes, and at some point in time, there are going to be large mistakes. How are we doing as far as I guess risk management is one element of it, and then, for lack of a I'm sure there's a technical term for it, but disaster management. Once something bad happens, at trying to get the cows back in the barn as best we can, at least.
Yes. Oh, the technical term will be incident response.
Okay, thank you.
it's interesting because the human element is probably the one that you have almost zero control over.
Mm-hmm.
It is almost. I was talking to a friend of mine a couple of days ago, and he was. You know, every time you get a email attachment and there's a link in it and the message says don't click on the link, the first thing the individual does is clicks on that link.
Of course.
And it's almost like we talked about don't do drugs about 10, 15 years ago. We declared war on drugs.
Uh-huh.
Kids are still doing drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So that link has become a major vulnerability for us till today and probably going to continue to be so.
But this link has Lindsay Lohan in it. I have to click it. I can't resist.
Those are the tricks that they're playing.
Yeah.
So at the other end of it, it could be a vicious malware. You never know. But going back, so if it happens, what's going on after that? What's going to happen after that? And I will tell you there are two things. One is that it's encouraging to see that most of the agencies, especially in the intelligence community and DoD, are implementing some sort of a security environment for thumb drives or for laptops that are not part of their network that they are bringing in.
Mm-hmm.
So those devices are being quarantined until the system runs a check on it to make sure no malware before they give them access to the system. Mm-hmm. So there are some technical solutions that are being implemented. The one that you're hitting on, the human element, it is absolutely critical that we need to address. So when an incident happens and you have a malware running through your network, that's the time for incident response.
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, agencies, organizations, financial institutes, they are well prepared to respond to the spread of malware. But the key in here is that has to be identified as being a malware. Because if you shut down your network because of a false positive, you have impacted your mission.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have good diagnostic tools, good forensic capabilities to actually isolate this malware and then look at its impact on your network. The files that it opened, the users that it went to, the routes that it picked. So all of those are indicators of the sophistication of this malware.
Mm-hmm.
And with good security capabilities, forensic capabilities, and a response mechanism, it could be easily maintained and contained.
Mm-hmm.
That I would say that larger organization, I'm going to go back to financial institutes, healthcare institutes, insurance companies, they're very good because they have the resources that if they can't do it themselves to reach out to an expert outside of their organization.
Mm-hmm.
That's the small organizations that we should be concerned about because they don't have the resources to do this and they also don't have the resources to hire an expert. And since the digital grid is interconnected, if this malware is not contained in their network,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be on the internet.
It's going everywhere. Yeah. You are, I'm sure, familiar with the concept of being the no person, and especially having a CISO that may have had to be the no person where people come and say, can I do this? Can I do this? No, no, no. I want to talk about one, at least one small area where we may be able to get a breakthrough so that these people can become yes people and helping find solutions. We'll do that when we come back from the break. My guest is Zal Azmi of CACI on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Continue our conversation in a moment.
And NBC News Radio, I'm Pete Williams. The search for surviving miners is on hold again in West Virginia. The Mine Safety Administration's Keith Strickland says an operation this morning had to be stopped when rescuers found dangerous gases.
This is a setback. It's not something that they won't get back in. We're going to continue to monitor that borehole number one.
President Obama and the Russian president signed a nuclear treaty today in Prague.
It enables both sides the flexibility to protect our security, as well as America's unwavering commitment to the security of our European allies.
It calls for cutting the number of nuclear warheads by one-third, but now faces ratification votes in both countries. And a diplomat from Qatar who was sneaking a smoke on a flight to Denver led to a bomb scare last night. Officials say when confronted, he flippantly told federal air marshals he was trying to light his shoes. The U.S. expects he'll be sent back to Qatar by his embassy. No federal charges have been filed. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Pete Williams, NBC News Radio.
Tired of replacing expensive inkjet printer cartridges? Maybe it's time you replaced the printer you put them in instead. Switch to a Kodak printer and stop overpaying for ink. With other inkjet printers, the way to save money on ink is to print less. But Kodak printers only use fairly priced ink. Get a new Kodak printer today at Walmart and join the thousands who've stopped overpaying for ink. Find out how much you overpay for ink at printandprosper.com.
Right now, every time you buy something, anything with your Discover card, you automatically have a chance to win up to $1 million.
So if I buy these jeans, I could win $1 million?
Yep.
This stainless steel dishwasher?
Uh-huh.
This chocolate bar?
You bet.
This chocolate bar?
Didn't you just buy that?
It's my emergency chocolate.
Oh, gotcha. Remember, using your Discover card could make you a millionaire. Learn more at discover.com. It pays to discover. Visit discover.com/giveaway for alternate entry options.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from April 7th, 2010. The G fund is unchanged at $13.23. The F fund rises 0.06 at $13.56. The C fund loses 0.08 at $14.09. The S fund drops 0.08 at $18.57. And the I fund loses 0.03 at $18.87. Your L funds are lower. The 2040 down 0.04 at $16.50. The 2030 loses 0.04 at $16.22. The 2020 drops 0.03 at $15.95. The 2010 loses 0.01 at $15.55. And the L income is down 0.01 at $14.16. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Here's to you, doctors. After all, yours is the very first face all of us see. You're who all of our mothers hope will someday grow up to be. It's you who we run to with a sniffle, a fever, or the odd case of mesenteric lymphadenitis. You fix our broken bones. You mend our broken hearts. You help us with everything from our allergies to, well, our zits. And though it may seem we sometimes don't appreciate all that you endure to keep us well, the endless years of schooling, the 14-hour shifts, the vending machine coffee, or actually having to read medical journals, we do appreciate you. Because when we're feeling our worst, we can count on you to give us your best. You're our healers. You're our heroes. You're our doctors. So from all of us to all of you, thanks. Kaiser Permanente. May you live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of TMR. TMR is a small, disadvantaged, woman-owned business. We provide enterprise architecture, governance, and IT operational support to DOD and civilian agencies, including OSD, DIA, DOJ, and DHS. Our contract vehicles include GSA 8A STARS, IT-70, MOBUS, FEDSIM, Alliant, and Navy Seaport E. For your agency's IT needs, visit TMR at tmrhq.com or call 703-323-1700.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Once the election is over, how do we still have a voice? Affirm will benefit from our collective wisdom at Affirm's April Luncheon. Join them on Thursday, April 15th at 11:30 at GW's Marvin Center for a discussion on how government can become more citizen-centric. Affirm will take a closer look at government collaboration efforts that place us at the center of the dialogue. That's April 15th from 11:30 to 1:30 at the GW Marvin Center. Register today at affirm.org.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest for the hour is Zal Azmi of CACI International, former Chief Information Officer at the FBI. And we were talking before and during the break, while we were off the air, about the concept of moving from no to yes. The CIOs and especially the CISOs at the agencies get the no sign hung around their necks rather regularly because people come to them and say, can I do this? No. Can I do this? No. And so you said something in the last segment that kind of triggered an idea in my head, and I would like to kind of explore the feasibility of it. We have a story up on federalnewsradio.com right now about the iPad, and I can't imagine you haven't seen the media hubbub about the iPad, and it's great, and it does all these different things, and there are even some applications that make the iPad attractive for the enterprise. And I would imagine it's only a matter of time until some people at least try to start getting them on networks in the government, and that's the focus of the story on federalnewsradio.com. I'm curious to know if it's feasible for there to be some kind of a screening or clearance along the lines of what you talked about earlier for things that have already been approved for the network, where I go and buy an iPad, I spend my own money on it, but I can justify, I can make a list and I can say to my supervisor or to the CIO's office or whatever at my agency, here are five things that I can do my job better by using this piece of equipment. The agency doesn't have to spend money on it. I did it on my own. It's my machine. But what are the behind the scenes ramifications of a situation like that that might allow you to get from being the no person to, yeah, go ahead. We know this is clear and there's no malware on here and it's not going to damage the network if you introduce this device.
It's rather simple to go from no to yes.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, Francis, every organization that has an enterprise IT infrastructure, it's built on an enterprise architecture. And as you build your enterprise architecture, you build that on a set of standards. And those standards are basically based on availability of commercial hardware and software. I've worked in a number of organizations, including CACI, that we have a suite of applications and a sort of hardware that is on the list of what we call it the approved list of hardware and software. So depending on what your needs are or which technology you like, you can go pick from that solution or from that hardware and software and purchase it, install it without any issues because it's been on the list, it's been already vetted, there are no compatibility issues, there are no security issues, there are no support issues, so you're moving forward without any problems.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge comes in when individuals are trying to actually introduce a new technology in the enterprise that has not been validated by the enterprise team. It hasn't been tested for compatibility, hasn't been tested for software, securities or malware or whatever it may be. And that's where the challenge is.
Mm-hmm.
In a number of organizations, actually people are looking at to see how predominant that request is. Let's take iPad. If an organization has 30,000 users and all of a sudden 10,000 requests for iPads, maybe it's time that we evaluate, test, validate the iPads and make it part of the enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a cost-benefit analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more technology you introduce in your environment, especially looking at your user base, if they are not technical savvy,
mm-hmm.
they just want to get the coolest technology to do their mission, then the support of that technology falls on the CIO in his help desk.
Mm-hmm.
And the more technology you have in an organization, the more complex that support becomes. Interoperability becomes an issue. Security becomes an issue. Access becomes an issue. And support becomes an issue. All of these will drive the cost up. So CISOs and CIOs in many organizations make conscious decisions on how many platforms and how many different types of software they will allow in their enterprise and validate it, support it, and maintain it.
You make a good point about scale, and I think when an individual user thinks, I just got a new mobile device, a new cell phone or whatever that I would like to be able to use, and I don't understand why I can't do it, it strikes me that a lot of times it's not the issue that, Zal, I don't know that I trust you to keep that piece of equipment clean. Yes. It's that if I let you do it, it's the old standby. I got to let the next guy do it. And pretty soon I've got to figure out how to clear 100 iPads or whatever. And I just don't have the time or resources to be able to do it for that limited amount of benefit that I might get.
Well, the other challenge you have is actually the technology is evolving constantly. I remember when we were deploying BlackBerries in FBI. We wanted to deploy 22,000 BlackBerries within the FBI. And deploying 22,000 BlackBerries takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And to FBI's credit, we deployed it in about 6 months worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 months within the implementation of BlackBerries, we were getting requests from our users for iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you already have a contract in place. You have already invested in BlackBerries. You have already built the infrastructure in there. You're halfway in the implementation. And then you have about 100 people who want a different brand of this device. Mm-hmm. So it makes it challenging, and it forces the CISOs and CIOs to say, well, not at this time. You know, we'll wait for a technology refresh, and then we will look at the benefits of one technology over the other,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll move in the right direction.
So maybe instead of moving from no to yes, we'll see CIOs moving from yes to later, from no to later.
I think that is probably the best answer,
mm-hmm.
because the technology constantly evolves. I mean, you buy a technology today, 6 months from now, something new becomes available and better becomes available. It's a responsibility of the management to plan for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Today we have this technology, 10 months from now we need something new.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is absolutely necessary. You see a lot of that in the commercial space. You know, CSCI is very known for being innovative and placing new technologies in the hands of their workforce,
mm-hmm.
because it's all about connectivity and carrying out the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the government needs to look at it in the same direction. Now, I don't know how we're going to do it with the budgeting cycle that we do, because technology becomes available today, but we're budgeting for 2 years from now.
Uh-huh.
But that's another challenge.
Well, and the whole procurement chain issue, we did a conversation a couple of weeks back about the reforming the defense acquisition reform chain, and yeah, you're raising your eyes about that. It was quite a conversation. I had General Boutell, who was CIO at the Army for a time, and General Myers, the former Joint Chiefs Chair here, and it was the same concept there, is that the technology timelines are shrinking, that by the time it used to be that by the time the technology was implemented, it had the potential to be out of date. Now it's by the time the RFPs are responded to, in some cases, the technology is obsolete that was requested in the original RFP.
And I completely agree with you. I will tell you, as I mentioned, I run the cyber division within CACI. Our cyber folks actually solely dependent on their own core competencies,
mm-hmm.
because as the technologies changes in that space, we have to gear these guys with the new tools and new technologies, and most of the work is being done in the cyber lab that we have. So they cannot call our traditional help desk and ask for assistance on a technology that is not part of the enterprise.
Right.
So our cyber workforce, I mean, they are their own engineers, their own help desk, their own a procurement shop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever we need, it's a very short time period for us to get our hands on that technology or that tool, something that the government is struggling with.
Yeah, it becomes very entrepreneurial, I imagine, where you have really small units within organizations that really become completely independent, operationally at least. There's obviously still within the umbrella of the whole organization, but at least their own little piece of it operates almost entirely autonomously.
Absolutely, because that's what the mission sort of drives them towards.
You think it's possible for that model to be replicated in government, or because of the requirements and regulations and just the inherent bureaucracy, is that maybe a little bit too much to aspire to?
I think it would be probably too much. We have a number of regulations that we need to change, the acquisition reform, the procurement, the whole cycle that we're doing budgeting. If we want to keep with the pace of technology, we have to do a major overhaul of the existing policies and procedures.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about that a little bit later on in the program. I do want to talk about the idea of openness and transparency and some of the things that this administration has talked about. It seems to be kind of a tug of war between those elements, and on the other side you have security and so forth. And I want to talk about the back and forth there and see if there's a way to kind of mash those up when we come back from the break. My guest is Zal Azmi of CACI International, and our conversation continues in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
Become a citizen of Natstown and make your dollar go further at Nationals Park. Get your writ on and watch the Nats battle the Brewers April 16th, 17th, and 18th. There isn't a better way to celebrate the weekend. Friday, Jackie Robinson Day. Friday and Saturday, Miller Light Party Night. Sunday, Family Fun Day with pregame autographs and postgame kids run the bases. Spend less, get more, go Nats. Visit Nationals.com or call 888-632-NATS.
It's always nighttime somewhere, so who do military organizations around the globe turn to when they require the most widely accepted night vision technology in the world? ITT Defense and Information Solutions, now delivering enhanced night vision goggles with helmet-mounted fused technologies to deliver the latest in night vision capabilities for the dismounted warfighter. ITT Defense and Information Solutions, doing essential things in extraordinary ways. Visit them at defense.itt.com.
Your Army Computing Refresh calls for someone who knows the terrain. As a trusted supplier to the U.S. Army for over six decades, Hewlett-Packard is a name you can count on. HP offers a broad range of desktops, notebooks, and workstations at special ADMC2 prices. And they include efficiency features, like the all-new 2010 Intel Core i5 processor with Intel Turbo Boost technology. See the full range of solutions now at hp.com/HP for Army.
Newsmakers talk to Max Kakis on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
OPM Director John Berry.
Once we finish the agency clearings process, we'll be sending to the President a major hiring reform that will essentially bring us into the 21st century, or I should say the 20th century, where we'll just start using resumes like everybody else. I think if we do nothing else, this will be a landmark shift that will allow us to greatly benefit from progress that's been made long ago in the private sector.
Hear the entire interview online, Federal News Radio. FederalNewsRadio.com/FederalDrive. FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Zal Azmi of CACI International, the former Chief Information Officer at the FBI. And we've covered a lot of ground here about cybersecurity in particular. A lot of the conversation that the Obama administration initiated in the area of technology when they took over about a little over a year ago had to do with openness and transparency, which appears, at least on the face, to be kind of the polar opposite of keeping networks secure and making sure that you don't have people on the network accessing information that they shouldn't, so on. I'm curious to hear your thoughts about whether that really is the case and how we can kind of smash together the ideas of controlled, maybe the concept is controlled transparency, I don't know. But achieving the administration's desire to have information more widely available to people while still keeping what needs to be kept secure. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes and yes.
Okay.
I think that definitely applaud the Obama administration for the transparency initiatives that they have implemented. I mean, there's definitely more information available on government website than there were a few years ago. The issue comes in actually specifically on the cyber transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And the key in here is the number of intrusions that both private sector and public sector actually suffer on a daily basis. So how much of that information is being shared by both sides? I know there's a reluctance on the private sector in terms of sharing some of the intrusions in their network with the certs. But there's also on the other side, there are some sophisticated intrusion against the government agencies that are not being shared. And that makes the challenge of cybersecurity even more harder.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have a overall picture of intrusions, let's call it within the United States cloud. If the United States has a cloud and the intrusion happens and then it's on different sectors
mm-hmm.
by different individuals or organizations or nations, that becomes really sophisticated and very difficult to manage if that information is not shared. There's a good possibility that the same attack happened in, let's take the New York City, you know, they suffered intrusion and California may suffer similar intrusion. If that information is not shared by, let's say, financial industry and the power grid,
mm-hmm.
then we don't know what we are dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say, that we don't have a pictured or a good situational awareness of the United States cloud,
mm-hmm.
what is happening in that area, because that information is not being shared.
So yeah.
That's where the transparency is not as transparent as we like to see it.
Yeah.
You know, we being the cyber professionals, because we can fix problems that we are aware of. We can predict some of the problems based on the targeted attacks, based on the signatures, based on the vectors, based on the complexity. We can determine who the intruders are.
Mm-hmm.
But if that information is not shared, then the cyber workforce is sort of blind.
That's an interesting concept, because I wonder if most CIOs are still thinking about, I'm responsible for the Department of blank, whatever it is, rather than I'm responsible for a component of the federal cyber presence. And that's a mindset. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the hour about the human element, the mindset component rather than the technical component, changing the way people think about what it is that they do exactly.
Yeah. In cybersecurity, and you have heard that and everybody talks about it, it's not one individual or one organization's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of our responsibility. I mean, I have multiple computers at home, and if I have an open port because my daughter goes to some educational site and downloads something and creates an open port, that could become a jump point for an attack on any government agency.
Mm-hmm.
So situational awareness, education, training, all of those things become very, very and increasingly important in our environment. We have to know what happens. So when you're looking at the security of the cyberspace, I would say it's the responsibility of everybody who's under the United States cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has to be aware of that whatever they do could be a threat to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at good examples, Wi-Fi's. You know, in our neighborhood, if you open up your laptop, you'll find about a half a dozen unsecure Wi-Fis.
I had to knock on one of my neighbor's doors the other day for that very reason. Just say, hey, just to let you know, somebody could drive through this neighborhood and really cause some damage at your house. Because they do some pretty sophisticated stuff online that we've talked about, you know, over some barbecue. But I'm not sure people understand the implication of that. And the same thing holds true at the agencies, I imagine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we're spending a lot of time building firewalls and intrusion detection system, and we're building all of these walls. But in reality is every single day, more and more of our workforce becomes mobile.
Mm-hmm.
So they are not within those, I call it the Great Walls of China. They are not within those walls. They are outside. So how are we going to protect that security when they are at the airport using the Wi-Fi there, or they're sitting at a Starbucks using it, or they're sitting hoteling somewhere and using some unsecure Wi-Fi. So how do we secure that? Because we already know that these devices that they're using have been connected to the enterprise somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have agency data on it. So how do we protect that? And they are not within our own environment.
Yeah.
So there's some really out-of-the-box thinking needs to happen to prepare us for the future, because in the future, everybody's going to be connected from everywhere. So we will be constantly – so when I talk to United States Cloud, I mean, we are basically under with this one umbrella connected 24/7.
Yeah.
And the cybersecurity professionals must make sure that all of those everything that is under that cloud – remain secure.
That's a really interesting way to think about the concept, and I think a useful way, an eloquent way to name it, because I haven't really heard it named that way before, and I think that to hear you explain it, it makes a tremendous amount of sense, because for the reasons that you outline. I wonder what role maybe OMB with Mr. Chopra and Mr. Kundra, what role they might play in introducing that concept across the agencies to get the CIOs and the whole rest of the C-suite on board with that idea that you are no longer just your agency, but you're a component of this cloud.
I think Vivek Kundra, the CIO of the nation, is making good progress in that area. I was actually reading an article a couple of days ago that he has developed a partnership with private sector and actually working on a concept of implementing a government cloud. So that would be the first step in the right direction,
mm-hmm.
at least bringing the agencies under a single cloud so we can secure their communication, if it's .gov or .mil or whatever it may be. I think that would be the right thing. And that in itself is going to produce valuable lessons learned and will enable us to actually sort of expand on that concept at the national level.
Mm-hmm.
And that is imperative, because right now, if you look at all of the different networks, I think DoD by itself has 15,000 networks. Securing every one of those networks by itself is going to be a tremendous challenge, and it is a challenge today. So if we put all of those under one cloud and then we secure the cloud, then maybe we have a chance of defending and protecting some of our digital assets.
Well, and the whole mentality, I think, of the cloud is a whole other issue that, unfortunately, we won't have time to get in today. I would like you to come back and talk about that at some point. But was Mark Forman's suggestion not a couple of months back that at some point what's in the cloud won't be desirable to the bad guys because people will want to keep the good stuff where they can be absolutely 100% sure that it's secure, and so the network intrusions and so on will continue to be directed at the internal networks rather than the cloud, which I think that concept makes a lot of sense. My guest is Zal Azmi of CACI International on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back to wrap up our conversation in just a moment.
You wouldn't drive your kids in the car without them wearing their seatbelts, so why would you leave them unprotected once you're gone? At Zell Law, we help protect your assets for your heirs and provide the latest techniques designed to maximize your wealth. To learn more, call 571-203-9355 or visit us on the web at zelllaw.com. You can also join me, Wayne Zell, every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth right here on Federal News Radio.
The mechanical contractors, plumbers, and steam fitters of cost. 25 years ago, we made a binding written commitment to excellence, a pledge to each other, our customers, and the people of the capital area. No strikes or lockouts, top quality work, ethical practices, unmatched productivity, and a commitment to the finest training of our workers. It's still in force. We signed it again just to make the point. Cause means excellence. Make sure your plumbing and HVAC contractor belongs to Cause.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
The Internet will always be dangerous, but DNS security is a must. Here's Joe Waldron, product manager at VeriSign.
There are always new types of attacks that people launch, and DNSSEC helps us mitigate one of those vulnerabilities within the infrastructure that I think will ultimately help with improved confidence and trust that end users and registrants have in operating on the Internet.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Are you accountable for improving efficiency and productivity? Then the 2010 DoD Service-Oriented Architectures Symposium is for you. Learn about SOA best practices and discipline from baseball's Iron Man Cal Ripken, Union Pacific CIO Lyndon Tennyson, apprentice winner Kelly Perdue, DoD Assistant CIO David Wennergren, DoD Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer Beth McGrath, and many others. Be at the Crystal City Sheraton on April 21st and 22nd. Register at SOASymposium.com. That's SOASymposium.com.
Be sure to mark April 29th on your calendar and attend the Excellence.gov Awards luncheon at the JW Marriott Hotel in Washington. These awards will recognize the game changers, those federal programs and their managers who have achieved exceptional results in managing IT in support of the government's mission and serving citizens. On April 29th, the winners will join the over 150 programs that have received the Excellence.gov Award since 2002. For more information, go to actgov.org/excellence.gov2010.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest for the hour has been Zal Azmi, former CIO at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, now with CACI International. And we just have a very short time left, and the hour's gotten away from me. I'm not the best time manager sometimes when I get talking about things like cyber that I find tremendously interesting. But I'm grateful for your time today. I wonder if we could finish out with kind of a minute or so about lessons learned from NextGen. As I said during the break, there are a number of CIOs and former CIOs in the government that have done a lot of difficult things. Not many have experienced what you experienced with NextGen, and I wonder what your takeaway from that might be.
Well, I'm sure you're referring to the FBI's Trilogy program.
Yes.
And I will tell you this, Francis, this was probably one of the highlight of my career to go to Bureau at a time that they were transitioning from a law enforcement organization to an intelligence organization, and the Bureau was transforming in every aspect of its mission and technical infrastructure. And quite frankly, to go in there and look at that program and move it forward was very challenging. I would tell you that I'm grateful for Director Mueller's support because he personally took an interest in this program. And if I will tell you that I probably met with him about 9 times a week, I'd be underestimating. Mm-hmm. He, at least 2 of those meetings were on the Trilogy program and how we're going to get it on track and how we're going to deliver it. And at the end, we did. Mm-hmm. Very successfully, we delivered the 2 parts of Trilogy program. And the other part of it was that he gave me, as the CIO, latitude to actually build my organization again around the core competencies that we needed in that organization.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped tremendously. On the other side, I would say that the number of days and hours that I've spent briefing oversight staffers is probably tremendous. I don't think any CIO has done this. We briefed about 8 subcommittees on a quarterly basis for 5 years.
You don't miss that at all, do you?
Not at all. Not at all. But they were all good and pleasant sessions. We educated them. They understood what the Bureau was doing, and they were very supportive. And I think that goes all to the Bureau's willingness to be transparent and actually bring issues to the staffers and brief the members as needed.